From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, thrilled to be broadcasting live from one of my favorite spots in the entire city, the Hilton President Hotel, right in the heart of downtown Kansas City, Missouri, just a very short walk away from Miller Lite Fan Fest. We'll be back on stage tonight, and an easy walk away from the T-Mobile Center, site of the Big 12 Championship Tournament. I'm inside the drum room, a great place to come and enjoy some drinks before or after the game. And this is where you want to stay if you're coming to Kansas City, if you're looking for a staycation, want to come downtown, if you're going to go to a concert, or if you wanted the games or whatever, come on down. As Barry White said, I cordially invite your ass to come on down to the President Hotel, the official hotel of the Border Patrol, and the official hotel of me. And so I love it. And great people here, and always look forward to my stay at the President Hotel. Always look forward. That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. And I also look forward to talking to Gabe DeArmond as part of our Border Patrol Fast Break. Gabe DeArmond, Oh, that's right. Gabe, I'd like to take this opportunity to publicly apologize to you. I didn't know I still had it in me, but fellas, Jake, Nate, you don't know this, but I fired off a pissed off text message at 10:48 p.m. on Wednesday night after the Mizzou-Georgia basketball game. Were you even impressed that I was still engaged and cared enough to send an angry text message to you so late at night, Gabe?
Here has been my reply, Stephen, for about 8 weeks to most people that send me similar messages during Missouri basketball games. I just say, I know why I'm watching. Why are you watching? If you continue to do things that you know are going to leave you angry and frustrated, that is really a... that's your choice, that's a you thing.
Well, here's the deal. I was watching with my daughter. She loves basketball, and she's the eternal optimist. And, you know, when there's 3.5 minutes left and Mizzou's up 7, she jinxed it, and she said they could really win this game.
Yeah. When Noah Carter threw away the inbounds pass, I knew it was over.
Right, and how mad Dennis Gates looked. I looked at her, I said, baby, you just don't understand. She goes, you're always so negative. I said, let's watch. They didn't score again after that exchange. Yeah. And Georgia finished on a 12-0 run. I mean, that was it. If you just watch that game, that was the whole season pretty much, right? That was a perfect example of what happened so many times this season.
Yeah, I know it will make some people mad that I say this, but it had to end that way. That was perfect. That was the 32-game season in, 15 minutes. If you watch that game, you know the entire season. They found more ways to lose than any team I think I've ever followed. Their season should have been very similar to what Arkansas, Georgia and Vandy, the other three teams playing on Wednesday, it wasn't a good team. Nobody could watch this and think, hey, this is a roster that's going to compete for the NCAA tournament, anything like that. But they should have stumbled into 4 or 5 along the way. It's almost more, I don't want to use the word impressive, but it's harder to explain how they went 0-19 than it would have been like 4-14.
I tell you what, though, if you think that the old message boards at PowerMizzou.com have featured many threads on bring Kim English home. Do you think that's going to be turned up a notch after last night when Kim English leads Providence to an upset victory over top 10 Creighton in the Big East quarterfinals? And somehow, the basketball nation became enamored with Kim English, his demeanor on the sideline, him getting super pissed off at the refs after he got teed up, him getting down into a defensive stance during the game. People went crazy. He was even asked about his relationship status after the game. Jake, I sent that to you. If you got that, I'd like to play. This is Kim English answering questions after the game last night. Nate, I don't know if you heard this. Listen to this.
Second round.
So you are trending on Black Twitter. The exact Twitter.
Come on, Black Twitter.
They like your
okay. Okay.
And so they're wanting to know who it is, what's his marital status.
I think that's our first marital status question in tournament history.
The exact question is, do you thought single or more in the house?
You could pass. Man, yeah, no comment. I'm locked in on his team. I'm locked in on our team right now.
So he's having to answer ridiculous questions because apparently so many female basketball fans became enamored with him last night. But let's be honest, he's doing a hell of a job. And that was a big win for Kim English. And all of us who know Kim English are happy for him. But that's just going to continue to – and guess what? I'm guilty of it, too, because someday I would love to see Kim English coach Mizzou.
So there's only two issues with this. Dennis Gates is not getting fired.
Right.
And I don't think Kim English wants this job.
Why don't you stab me in the heart, Gabe?
Why? What do you mean by that, Gabe?
Kim English was a candidate here last year. I said at the time, look, I don't know if he's ready, but if Missouri doesn't hire him now, I don't think they'll have another chance to hire him. I think the time to hire him was last year. If it was going to happen, it didn't happen. It is my belief that it is unlikely to happen in the future.
Well, there's some traffic I could walk into right here in downtown.
With kicking the nuts.
I mean, and here's the thing, guys. Dennis Gates is coaching this team next year. Like, it's what I've said on
Quit
our
Quit threatening board. Us.
No, it's what I've said 6,000 times. Like, you can talk about wanting him gone if you want, but it's not going to happen. So, again, I mean, they would owe him $21 million. He had one bad – and it was a really bad year. He may not recover from it. I understand completely anybody that is skeptical or even convinced that Dennis Gates can't get it done here. That's fine. He's going to be the coach next year. So whatever people want to spend 12 months talking about, they can spend 12 months talking about. I just refuse to spend my energy on it, on things that are not happening.
I didn't say next year. I said some year. 1 year.
Let's talk in 12 months, and then we can do that. But
all right, hey,
Gabe,
it's a date.
Gabe, you said you refused to talk about it, yet you've had to say it 6,000
right.
times.
That's right.
Do you think anybody's actually listening to you?
No. including apparently Stephen St. John.
Right. By the way, this was already part of our text conversation from late Wednesday night, so I've already gone through this. He's already told me to stop it once.
Steve's going, la, 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 la. Can't hear you, Gabe.
Also, Jake, just clip Nate saying, do you think anyone is listening to you? And just play that at the open of every show. That's excellent marketing.
You're saying Gabe, something we don't like, Gabe.
Right. You've been coming on here long enough. Don't you know how this works, Gabe?
I know exactly how it works. And I also know nobody's listening. So we're good.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay.
I've worked here for 25 years, and I have no idea how it works. So someone tell me. Before we let you go, tomorrow is the spring game Should it be a you tell me anything you want to add to that as far as the importance for recruiting or anything else? They had a big big weekend last weekend, and now Mizzou fans can at least take their troubles and put them behind them and go watch a little bit of football tomorrow.
Yeah, they picked up a backup quarterback last week in Notre Dame transfer and Arizona State transfer, Drew Pine. I didn't count. We just posted a list of guys we're expecting to be in town. I want to say there were at least probably 20 to 25 names. A lot of offensive linemen, a lot of four-star kids on that list. So the spring game really is biggest for recruiting. I mean, it's a fun time for diehard fans that just want football 12 months a year to get out and see a little football and lay eyes on the team. If I was in charge of the spring game, I would tell Brady Cook and Luther Burden they were the honorary coaches and they can stand on each sideline and call plays and do whatever they want to do. I would not have them anywhere near live action where they could do anything so minor as, you know, twist an ankle. But I imagine they'll probably get a few reps out there.
Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com has been our guest. Gabe, enjoy some football tomorrow, and I've got a list of questions for you next week, and we'll look forward to that. So thank you for your time, sir.
All right. I assume number one is, are they firing Dennis Gates? That's just going to be where we're going to be every Friday.
No, it'll be, are they hiring Kim English? It's a different question, Gabe.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
I wish with all my heart I could read you the whole text you sent from late Wednesday night from both sides. You guys would find it so very entertaining, filled with anger and venom from both sides.
I love Gabe. I know why I'm watching.
Yeah, he didn't understand why I was so mad. I'll be honest with you, I couldn't either.
Why are you doing this to yourself?
Why am I mad? Yeah, why am I mad about this? Let's let's move on to Jay Heidrick and talk to
Texas State.
Hello, Jay. How are you?
I'm well, guys. How are you doing?
Oh, we're just having giggles and fun here as I broadcast live from the drum room inside the President Hotel. Look, it's been – I know K-State lost, but we all got a big surprise last night, a wonderful surprise with the Chiefs signing Hollywood Brown to a one-year deal. So everyone's in a good mood. And I know it's tough after K-State lost to Iowa State. But Jerome Tang made a hell of a case, and he had all kinds of facts and figures put together as to why K-State should be a tournament team. And I know it has a lot to do with what else happens around the nation, but now that the regular season is over and the run of the tournament is over, do you believe they did enough to get into the NCAA tournament?
I do. I think, you know, they had 9 wins in conference, 8 in the regular season, 1 in the tournament. They have 5 quad 1 wins. They have no quad losses to quad 3 or quad 4 teams. They play the toughest conference in the country. I think they're tied for 6th of the most amount of top 25 net wins of any team in the country. The teams that are around them with that are either projected to be 1 seeds or top 5 seeds overall. And here we are just having a discussion about whether or not K-State did enough. I mean, if not K-State, then who? And if you put any of the bubble teams up against K-State on a blind resume, then it's a no-brainer. And this is what is part of the frustrating process is. We have these guys out there like Lenardi and Palm and everyone who issues these seemingly minute updates of bracketology, and they put, you know, next four out plus buys, you know, pretty much everything. And that becomes gospel for some reason, and it fits the narrative. And when you look at what some of those guys have for teams that are in versus teams that are out, it just makes no sense to me. And yes, K-State's net score is not as high as probably it should be or others would like to be. But if anyone can explain to me how the net is calculated and how that works into it, I'd really like to know, because I've talked to several coaches about it, and they're like, I don't know how this works. My postseason is determined by an algorithm that no one can explain to me. And so is it a factor? Yes. But what happened on the court, I think, is more important. And the facts and figures that Jerome Tang cited, and when you look at it, to me it's just a no-brainer.
So the Wildcats, I don't think it's any debate that they helped themselves with their win over Iowa State at the end of the regular season and then getting that win over Texas in the Big 12 tournament. I guess what maybe impressed you the most about those, especially the performance against Texas here in the Big 12 tournament? Because I know you were there in person.
Yeah, I thought Day-Day Ames towards the end of the season really came out of his shell a little bit. As a freshman, you know, it's tough being a freshman at any level. It's really hard being a freshman at this level. And I thought he came out towards the end of the season and really started to solidify his role and as the future point guard of this team. He broke into the starting lineup for the second half of the season, played really well against Iowa State in Manhattan, played really well against Texas at K-State, and was a driving force for that win this week in the Big 12 tournament. So I was really impressed with him. I was also impressed with another young kid, R.J. Jones. Didn't get as much playing time during the season as Day-Day did, but you know he had moments where he was a really bright spot. So, and that's what people don't remember about K-State as well too is Day-Day Ames, freshman starter. Jarrell Colbert is basically a freshman starter. R.J. Jones, freshman. This is a young team as well too. They do have a blend of some upperclassmen, but they're relying on a lot of young kids as well too. And when you look around the Big 12, and this is a product of the transfer portal and NIL, teams aren't young anymore. And so that's not an excuse as to what K-State did or didn't do this year. That's more of a focus on the future and what I'm excited to see moving forward.
We have Jay Heidrich on the line. And so, Jay, you've seen these teams up close here in the Big 12 tournament, and you've seen K-State play against them. Who do you think is going to end up winning the tournament this weekend? Do you think it'll be Houston? Will it be basically the home team, Iowa State, or could we have an upset and have Texas Tech or Baylor walk away with the title?
I think it's going to be Houston. I think Iowa State's a good club. They pressure the ball. They did a really good job last night in particular, doubling the on-ball screens. That K-State just didn't have guys that could get around those and handle that pressure. But Houston's just a different level of athlete and different level of team. It seems like they just bring off droids of 6'8 athletes off the bench, and you're like, how many of those you got over there? And they just pressure you, they swallow you up, and it's something that Iowa State I don't think athletically can match. And so we'll see, but I think Houston is a step above the rest of the teams in the tournament right now.
All right, Jay. So as you look at it, I mean, like you said, we think that K-State, if we follow the bracketology stuff, there's a decent chance they're not in the tournament, whether we think that's right or not. If that ends up being the case, how much would an NIT situation help K-State in terms of just building for next year? What would your enthusiasm be like as a K-State fan if that's what you end up having to settle for?
You know, that's an interesting question, Nick. I was talking about this with a buddy the other day, and in the past, it's, you know, NIT is great. You know, it is, particularly since they've revamped the selection criteria. You know, it's harder for a P5 team to get into the NIT than it was before. And if you can get that anytime you get a chance to keep playing, do those things, that's great. However, what's changed in recent years is the transfer portal. Transfer portal opens on Monday for college basketball. So now you have to ask yourself, is it better to be playing in the NIT, or is it better for your staff to be out there recruiting, making calls, doing things with the transfer portal, getting ready for next year? And so that's a question I don't know the answer to. I personally, selfishly, would love to continue to see this team continue to play, get some games in, and continue to get better experience postseason, because it is fun getting to go places, particularly if you can make it to New York from Madison Square Garden. But we'll see how that works out, because with the portal opening on Monday, it's going to get busy real quick, and K-State has some needs they need to fill for next year.
You know, it's so funny you say that. It's like, hey, here we are. waiting to find out who makes the NCAA tournament, and then there's that reminder, oh, the transfer portal. And it never stops trying to massage the roster to fix it. I mean, look, for our purposes, we have 4 hours to fill a day. It's added so much to college football and college basketball because it's just basically free agency. Like, but what do you think? Just the fact that the transfer, the timing of it, just after we find out who goes in the NCAA tournament, there's no rest for the coaches that don't make it, that are trying to get back into it, or the coaches that make it that are trying to stay in it.
Yeah, it's free agency is what it is, and the hard part is that you have to recruit your kids again every year. I don't think the transfer portal itself is a huge problem. I don't think NIL itself is a huge problem. I think you can manage those. I think both of them combined, the way they're currently structured, is a huge problem. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's a problem with how it's structured. And so coaches have to address that. You know, I was at an event with Coach Kleiman a few weeks ago and mentioned the difficulty of the transfer portal in December while you're trying to get your high school kids signed, you're trying to go to bowl game, get ready for bowl prep, you're trying to do all these things, and it's just chaos. So there's got to be some changes to the structure of it. I'm all for kids being able to play where they want, being able to move around. I'm all for kids being able to make money off their name, image, and likeness on it. But there has to also be something that allows coaches to know who their rosters, who's going to be on their roster at a certain period of time. And if you want to transfer after that, that's great, but there's no automatic eligibility. And I think there has to be some guardrails that are put in place to allow coaches to understand what their roster is going to look like. Because at the end of the day, too, not only do the coaches need that, but the teams need it, too. And you look at K-State as an example this year. They didn't lose anyone to the transfer portal, but they lost two kids for in Naquan Tomlin and Quez Glover, who were going to be huge contributors to this team. And so now it puts kids in positions where they have roles on teams that they weren't ready for. Freshmen maybe have to step up and play when they're not ready. And it affects everyone, and not just basketball. You know, you have, I think in April you have the transfer portal opening for football again. So these coaches have spent so much time recruiting kids from outside, and then also keeping kids that are on it. And you think you got, Brady Cook, for example. You think you got him locked up, ready. Okay, well here comes Alabama with, a bunch of money in a car. And so
easy there. Hold on,
I know.
Wait a minute.
I know, but there's. That's the reality of it. You have to continually, recruit your kids to keep them there. And I think coaches are all for that, as far as letting kids have those opportunities. But there just needs to be some structure around it.
That's Jay Heidrich. Jay, thanks for the time, my man.
All right, guys. We'll see you later.
All right, now let's chat with Greg Gurley and talk Kansas.
Kansas.
Well. I'm sitting here in the drum room, with headquarters of Greg Gurley, inside the Hilton President Hotel, the table over across from me, my man Philip Strnad. And, Greg, I did as you said. I requested to be checked into your room that you were staying in, but they said it's shut down for renovations for at least 2 weeks. What the hell went on in there, Greg? They wouldn't let me get in your room.
Renovations? Okay.
I don't know.
There
was some damage. I don't know what they're talking about. So,
I have no comment on that. Right. But had a great experience at the hotel, the President Hotel, obviously, right. But not as great of an experience at T-Mobile Center, and that's why I'm sitting at home right now.
Well, I have one issue with you. We tried to get you on stage to do the limbo. The opportunity was there, and you passed up on it. Nate was super disappointed. Why wouldn't you do the limbo yesterday? I think you would have fared very well.
I did not have my physician with me, or I would have done it, because something would have gone wrong. I don't. The limbo, if it was at, 6'2", I might have been able to get under it.
Nate, any follow-up comments, anything you've heard so far?
No. There's a lot of things running through my head about the renovations needed at the hotel. I'm just gonna move on from that.
And yeah,
but I can tell you this.
Usually I have a good comment, but I stay away from that one.
Hey, look, but Greg, you're absolutely right. This is the place to be, and we always have a great time down here at the President Hotel. Every Big 12 tournament, and anytime you've got a concert or an event down here, downtown, or you just want to get away from them damn kids and have a staycation, come on down to the President Hotel. It's my favorite place in Kansas City. And even Greg Gurley stays here, and he has the he has the taste for the finer things in life. But as you mentioned, Greg, tough appearance for Kansas, but now they have a chance to get healthy and get ready for the NCAA tournament. And so, what are you expecting as far as seeding? Where do you think Kansas? What do you think they are? A four seed? What's your best guess?
That'd be my best guess, would be a four seed, just on the body of work. Obviously, lately it's not been as good, but when you look back at the non-con and how difficult of a schedule we played, everybody, you know, beating UConn, beating Tennessee, beating all these, you know, Kentucky, and we had a lot of great wins, and we were playing healthy and at full strength, but I do believe we're going to be at full strength come March. So all that being said, I think we're a four seed. I do not believe we'll be protected as we have been in the past with the new rules where they take care of you geographically as far as putting you to the closest place to play, which would be Omaha. I do not believe we'll be there. So I think we'll just go out in the mix and, you know, see where they put us. It could be Salt Lake, could be Pittsburgh, could be Brooklyn. You never know. But I don't think they're going to keep us in the Midwest area. We might be in the Midwest region, but not be playing in Omaha, Indianapolis, or maybe even Memphis. So, which is fine. We'll get on a plane. We'll go play you wherever. That's fine. We got 3 days to kind of chew on that over, watch a ton of ball, see where the chips fall. But I think a four.
What? I'm sure you can't give us all the details, or you probably don't even know, but what do we think about McCullough and Dickinson? You know, like, are they going to be healthy enough to go? What's the expectation in that regard?
Yeah, in all of my pregame stuff the other day with Coach, he said he's very confident that they're going to play next week, and that's all I have to go on. That's all they really have to go on is what they say. I mean, it's 7 days away, you know, from that possibility. It could be 6 days away if we play on Thursday. But he kind of said to me, you know, lack of something happening in the next 6 days, which shouldn't. Got some time to get healthier with the other guys. And so I got full belief that we'll have our starting five of DeJuan, KJ, Johnny, Hunter, and Kevin come NCAA tournament time.
I just wonder, I guess we're all fascinated to see. I could see this being a really dangerous team in the tournament,
yeah,
if those guys are healthy and they get a little bit of swagger back. On the flip side, you tell me, because you're closer to the team, just watching the team, they seem like they've lost a lot of swagger this year, you know, with everything that's happened going down the stretch. Where do you see the team mentally when it comes to that? Can just having those guys back give them immediately the swagger back that we're used to seeing Kansas have?
Obviously, it's been a weird year. I mean, losing on the road the way we did to the teams we lost to, that's not the way we've been built over the last 21 years under Bill Self. So, yeah, you lose a little bit of swagger, but, you know, we look at it that the Tuesday night before we go to Houston, we play Kansas State, we look great. Things are clicking. Nick Timberlake had 18 points. I mean, we're making open shots. We're defending. And then that team goes to Houston, albeit against the number one team in the country that's really good defensively and had a pissed-off attitude because they got dismantled in our building. It was the tale of two games. So we looked like we couldn't beat anybody. We just wanted that clock to run in the second half and just get out of there. And then you also, as a Kansas fan or as a college basketball fan, you got to put the memory of the Cincinnati game out of your head, because that's not Kansas. When we don't have those two guys, we're completely different, and we showed that on Wednesday night. So you're right, though, where you have to say, hey, this is a dangerous team. We've been healthy. We've shown we can beat anybody. So we're going to go into it the more than likely the same seed that UConn was last year, and they ran through the NCAA tournament. I don't think they won a game by less than double digits the entire tournament. So it's possible. We just have to get that swagger back, and that a lot of that'll be in the first round game of the NCAA tournament. If we can click a little bit, Bill said it in my post-game interview with me, a very depressed post-game interview, obviously, Wednesday night, but he goes, you know what? We won a couple games in the NCAA tournament, and nobody's going to remember this. We'll be in the Sweet 16, and then you play another two-game tournament. And he's exactly right, but that's easier said than done.
Hey, Greg, before I let you go, you've seen all these teams up close, and now it's going to be basically Iowa State will have home games tonight, and if they win tomorrow night, who do you think ends up winning the Big 12 tournament?
Well, you're right. They're going to have the home court advantage because of the way their fans travel, but I don't see anybody beating Houston. What I was so impressed with them last week at their place, how, you know, the difference, I think, this year than in years past, because Kelvin's had great teams, obviously a Final Four a couple years ago. They always struggle offensively when they lose the NCAA tournament, but I think they've fixed that. I think Jamal Shedd is an All-American, obviously the player of the year in our league, and he runs that team, and they've got pieces. L.J. Crier can shoot it. I mean, they've got options. And I just don't think they've had that in the past, or if they've had it, those guys haven't performed. I think they can hang their hat on defense, but they're good enough offensively to win a Big 12 title and a national title.
Greg, as always, thanks for the time, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you, Philip.
That is shout out to you, Phil Strinad, as always, the wonderful GM here at the President Hotel. That's Greg Gurley. That is our Border Patrol fast break. We'll be back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Sign me up.
Stephen St. John live at the President Hotel in downtown KCMO. Nate Ducati back in studio with Jake Gutierrez. Now we're joined by Mike McFarland, who joins us every week during baseball season. This is appearance number one for 2024. Mac, what's going on, my man?
You know, the band's back together. Good to hear Jake's voice. I was kind of expecting to see him on TV in one of those Indeed commercials. Jake went out to find himself. Now, you know, one of those things. And glad that you grabbed him and drug him back in, Steven.
Yeah, I don't know if he found himself. Did you, Jake, by the way?
Yeah, many times. Many times, like a couple times a week.
Well, that's fantastic. But, you know, we are glad the band is back together. And, I mean, the biggest story, and there's been a few of them, of the Royals offseason was signing Bobby Witt Jr. to that long-term extension. What was your reaction to that deal, Mac?
No-brainer. Get him while you can. I think he proved last year consistently in the second half, especially what type of ball player he's going to be. It was just a matter of him settling in and finding his groove, just watching his adjustments, especially at the plate. I can't remember, gosh, what game it was or what team, but he took like a 100-mile-an-hour cutter on the inside corner and hit it out and kept it fair. And it's like, all right, you got to sign this kid now, as of bring him in after the game and throw a boatload of money at him and give Mr. Sherman some credit for spending the money and making that. Now you got the next fan favorite staying in town for a long, long time. And there's your impetus and driving force to go and get it. I mean, let's be honest. The American League Central is wide open, and the Royals have as good a chance as anyone to win that division and get to the playoffs this year. So that's where I'm at on this. Very excited for the future, and especially the way J.J. went out judiciously and spent money and got some very good ball players and some solid arms to cover that back end of the bullpen. A couple guys make that step. You got to basically signed a free agent with Vinny coming back healthy. Just very excited for the upcoming season.
So, out of all the new arms,
hi, Nate.
Hey, what's up, Mac? How are you, man?
I gotta
tell you, hearing the intro music, you know, Roll with the Changes, just got me fired up, man. It's like, oh, Mac is back. This is great. You mentioned all of the moves in the pitching staff. They had so much instability in the rotation last year. I forget every time we do it how many different pitchers they had starting a game last year, but it's a ridiculous number. It was over 30, right?
32.
32 different guys took a shot at starting a game for the Royals last year. How much more stability do you expect from this rotation this year with these veterans that have been brought in? How big of a difference is that going to make?
Well, I'll start with Waka and Lugo. I can just speak from experience with Kevin being with the Braves and Lugo being in the National League. They are not sorry to see him go. His spin rates, I guess, are just unbelievably off the charts. His fastball severely plays up, and he's a competitor. So they weren't too sad to see him leave the National League. And then Waka, you just got experience. You got guys that now that you can rely on. One of those two are going to be able to stop the pressure being on Brady Singer to go out and win each and every game. So he can take that step forward and hopefully relax a little bit. But to me, the biggest thing is the bullpen arms. Guys that have been through the fire. Will Smith, who was the closer for the Braves during their run, and the way that MacArthur looked, you got a Rule 5 draft pick in Sauer, and just those guys coming in on that back end just to bring some relief to some of those young kids that were thrown into the fire and say, all right, show us what you got. And pretty much that's what last year was, trying to figure out all of those position players that were trying to show what they could do. The only solid one is Garcia that you know is an absolute lock. He's a hell of a ball player, and you know, we knew he was good, but the rest of the league views him as this is a hell of a ball player. So throw that in the mix with Adam Frazier being able to come off the bench, Renfro, those guys. Look, you got a good blend of veterans who have been through the postseason and know what to do and how to keep grinding in the month of September to get to those playoff games in October.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about clubhouse culture and trying to change that, because again, that's something that the analytics can't measure, and you know, most fans, you know, we don't see that. And you know, Nate, as much time as you spend in the clubhouse, of course, Mac, you guys get that. And I had somebody with the Royals, and it's not a perfect example because, you know, one's a starting pitcher and one's a reliever, but they compared Will Smith coming in here to when James Shields joined the Royals and really in his personality was needed in that clubhouse to change the culture. And they said that they're hoping Will Smith can not only help them, because, you know, he came in here with at least the promise he could compete to be the closer. But they're hoping his personality is the right type to come in and have that kind of effect on the young players and on the clubhouse culture. Can you maybe elaborate on that and how important that is and what that could mean if, indeed, he could have at least something close to the effect that James Shields had on this baseball team?
Absolutely. I mean, look, you got Salvi. Salvi's still the man, the myth in that, but you also need that second voice to back it up. You know, you get tired of hearing the same voice screaming in team meetings and talking about how it should be done. When you add that second and even in some of this situation, third voice in there where these guys can step up, especially when the younger kids are struggling and they will struggle again, how to walk them through it, the mental approach that they're going to need to get themselves out of the funk and stay on an even keel. That's huge when you have multiple voices, not just one. Because sometimes it just starts to ring hollow saying the same thing day after day when you're in the middle of a rut. And having that second and third voice in there is huge, in my opinion, to help calm the nerves, understanding that, you know, when you're a young player,
You're fighting. Yeah, wins are great, but crying out loud, you're selfish. You want to establish yourself as a major league player and not have that prospect of them making a change and bringing someone up from Omaha. So the soothing nature of having multiple veteran voices in that locker room is going to be huge this year.
We're visiting with Mike McFarland. Mac, you mentioned earlier that getting Vinny Pasquantino back is like adding a free agent. And, you know, because of Steven's love of minor league baseball and prospects, we've had Vinny Pasquantino on our radar for a while and know that he's an on-base machine. He's a guy with an approach at the plate. What do you expect from him after missing as much time as he did last year? What's fair to expect from him to produce this season?
Well, first off, every team needs kind of like that team dork. And I think Vinny covers that, whether it's his media posts or pass watch or whatever it is. But you can get away with that when you have the intensity that he does when he steps in the box. He's looking to do damage. And that's what I like about his approach at the plate. His swing is controlled violence, I guess is the best way to put it. Where he gets in there, he hunts a pitch, and he puts it in play hard. And again, I mean, with Melendez and the other guys that are in there, it's going to take some pressure off of him, MJ, with having another left-handed bat with some thump in there that he's not going to have to go for the pump each and every swing. And MJ's taken some very good swings from what I've seen down in spring training. Hopefully they can carry it over, but having him back in that locker room to keep it lighthearted, he knows when to be serious, and that's when those veterans can, hey, Vinny, let's calm this down a little bit. They can step up to him and tell him that and say, all right, it's a good time to be loose and go crazy. And that's that veteran mix with the young players that are coming into their own a little bit that's going to be good. Expectations? Who knows? I, irregardless of what he's doing in spring training, it's still going to take some time against the A-level pitchers for him to find his groove and learn to hunt and get to that pitch that he's looking for. So he can start off a little slow, in my opinion, but I fully believe in his ability to get hot and be one of those guys to, you know, in essence, carry the team offensively when he gets on a roll.
You know, I think it's going to be interesting also now. I think we can find out more about Matt Quatrero now that he has, more options, more of a full deck of cards to utilize. He's got more weapons in the bullpen. He's got, Nate talked about how many different starting pitchers they ran through, 32 last year. Now it looks like he's got a real big league rotation in Cole Reagans and Waka and Lugo and Brady Singer, and then if he's healthy, Jordan Lyles is the fifth guy. You talked about having two major league utility guys off the bench in Garrett Hampson and Adam Frazier. They bring in Renfro. Velasquez can get a full year, hopefully a DH. Pasquantino back. What were your initial, thoughts on Q as a manager, and maybe now we can kind of get more of his personality and what he is as far as a strategist now that he has more weapons to utilize?
Well, start with the analytics side of things. You have a lot more info on veteran players. You know, analytics will tell you, well, so-and-so hits well on this day, on this time, and blah, 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 when they're young players, but you can never take into account the mindset of a young kid that's trying to establish himself. With veterans, you know what you have. There is that track record of their approach and how they get the job done in certain situations. It's going to make his job and the analytics department a lot easier when you have veteran ball players. You have a better sample of it. So utilizing that, last year sometimes it was like, well, let's try this at some point because you just don't know what you're going to get each and every time that you put a kid into a game or you throw a pitcher in a relief situation and how they're going to get it done. You can't put the analytics when it comes to the amount of pressure that's on a young ball player. Now with the veterans in there, you got a much better field of information that you can apply to and put the right player in at the right time and expect better results.
All right, Max. So one of the things we know is with the positions that are mostly locked up, there's very few position battles left. Is there any position battle that intrigues you the most out of what is still available?
Well, I mean, God, I like Freddie Fermin, but you pick up Nola, you pick up Sandy Leon. I don't know what their thought process is there. You know, where do you go? Nick Lofton, love the way that he plays. Drew Waters, Kyle Isbell. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of those little mini parts, in my opinion, that are going to be very important to how well you get out of the gate at the start of the season. So just watching what and trying to see the last week of spring training when they start to lock in a consistent rotation, a consistent lineup, seeing where they're going and where their thoughts are. I have obviously full confidence in that staff that they know exactly what they want to do, and they knew what they wanted to do. And either someone proves them wrong by not performing well or proves them right by saying, yeah, this is our option, this is our best lineup, this is where we're going opening day.
Hey, Mac, Bo Jackson is going to be inducted into the Royals Hall of Fame.
Good for him. Yep.
And you had an up-close view of Bo Jackson. So for those that were too young to watch him as a baseball player, what was he and what could he have been if not for injury?
One of the best ever, in my opinion. Power. I mean, you talk five tools. Now, Bo could go through those stretches where he was swinging a broomstick up there and couldn't make contact, but then he'd also go up and hit like seven home runs in a span of 10 days. Ungodly arm. That was one of the first things when we were in Memphis together, even in the minor league, that, well, he's got no chance at this. Oh, crap, here it comes. Just his arm strength from the outfield, you never took off a play at the plate because of his arm strength to make up the difference. Speed, power, just the pressure of the world on him, because every time we go on the road somewhere, you know, Yankee Stadium just booing the crap out of him, and then he pumps three bombs, you know, in a game and just takes it in stride like it's nothing. He would do just the most amazing things that, over the course of time, it just became regular, and you were like, well, that's just Bo being Bo. So from that standpoint, one, it was a hell of a lot of fun playing with him, seeing what he would do each and every night. Just the nicest damn guy, would go to bat for you in a heartbeat, and one of those guys that had the respect real quick of baseball players, irregardless of what the media wanted to make him out to be with playing two sports. Phenomenal. Best athlete I ever played with, I guess, pure and simple.
Mac, as always, it's great talking baseball with you. We look forward to talking with you, hopefully, during an exciting baseball season, and we will chat with you next week.
Looking forward to it, guys. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, Mac. That's Mike McFarland, who joins us every Friday during the baseball season right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.